You're listening to Brazen Bookworm's Unrighteous Reading Rebellion, a reform book snob's journey and musings through all things romance. Some language may not be safe for all ears. Frequent use of sarcasm may occur. You're listening to Brazen Bookworm's Unrighteous Reading Rebellion, a reform book snob's journey and musings through all things romance. Some language may not be safe for all ears. Frequent use of sarcasm may occur.
Welcome to another amazing episode. We are the Stalker Sisters. Well, the three of the Stalker Sisters are here today. Susie couldn't make it. And we are so incredibly honored and happy to have Rob Brinkman / Rob Hatchett with us today. He's one of my top favorite narrators, and having him on here to talk with us today is really, truly incredible. So Rob, thank you so much for being with us today, and take a minute to introduce yourself, please.
Sure. Well, the honor is mine, obviously. Really, thanks for having me. It's nice to see you all. After we've seen, some of us have met in person, but it's always nice to see faces in this audio industry that we work in. But my name is Rob Brinkman. I narrate under my name, and I narrate romance under Robert Hatchett. I am an actor. I've been acting professionally for over a decade in New York, and I've been narrating audiobooks technically since 2019, but really only full-time for the last year and a half or so. And I am just gosh darn thrilled to be a part of the community, and I'm excited to grow with it and see where it takes me and everyone that I get to meet along the way.
I love it. Well, like I said, we're really excited to have you here, and we're just going to jump right into some questions. If anything comes up that you think of, like I said, we're kind of, the squirrel moments take over occasionally. We go off the rails. There really aren't any rails. But feel free to jump in with anything else that you might want to talk about. We circle around to things all the time, and it's just kind of one of those, oh, we're here now. Okay, cool. Let's go with this.
Great.
We're going to jump right in. Julie had some great questions to start with.
Sure.
Why and how did you get into audiobook narration?
All right, so the origin story. My friend Sarah Naughton, who was also a fantastic narrator, she was one of my best friends in college. She actually introduced me to my wife shortly after college, my now wife. But she, a few years after college, she was like, you know, you're working so many jobs on top of performing. Why don't you try audiobook narrating? She'd been doing it since she was a kid, and I dipped my toes in, and it was just okay. I was doing like a book here, two or three books a year in between contracts, just sort of finding my recording space in my house, which was a plastic tub with some sheets inside of it first. And then I was, of course, in my closet for a period of time, as we all do. And then I started building a booth out of doors I found on the street. You know, every now and then apartments renovate and you just snag those solid wood ones from the old apartments, those real nice, solid, thick doors. And so I was slowly building and carving out a space in my apartment and finding a bit more consistent work with it. And it all came to a head in 2019 when I got married. I joined the New York City cast of Stomp. And then I was performing in that until the pandemic hit. And then during the pandemic, of course, the theaters shut down, and I had some spinal surgery, which was, you know, a sort of big moment for me and my recovery. And I decided to throw everything I have into audiobooks because I had the booth and I was finding some passion in it and finding a deeper understanding for the industry and the type of performance that it requires. And then I started a TikTok in January of 2020. And I mean, honestly, I owe a lot to the community, the social media community, for like lifting me up and giving me so much room to play and to meet new people and authors. And ever since then, I've been doing this full time and been looking to the future to see how I can grow this in the most big and beautiful way that I possibly can.
Well, you've done it.
Mm-hmm. I'm never quite there. I never let myself feel like I'm there. I certainly have a long way to go, and there's so many genres, and each one requires just a little bit of a different style. I feel like this is an industry where there's just always space to grow as a performer.
Mm-hmm. Right. How do you pick your projects?
I pick my projects by mostly scheduling is the sort of like the iron grip that decides whether I can do something or not. In general, I'm a yes man, and as much as I can be. I have a couple hard lines as far as consent goes, and with the romance, things that I prefer to narrate. But really, have I turned down any project? Maybe only under a consent situation. But I say yes if I can do it. I've been getting a lot of work in romance, which has been really thrilling and has allowed me to really grow in our romance community specifically. And I've got a couple narrators, I'm sorry, authors who have been working with me for years. I'm on book 9 of this young adult sci-fi series with one of my oldest authors. And so I'm at the point where I really am. I'm lucky to be able to say yes to as much as I can, and I don't mind booking out really far in advance, and I just try to do as much as I can at this point.
Do you, because this is one question I've thought about. Do you pre-read the books?
Absolutely. A
You do.
1,000%.
Okay. I was going to say, how in the world do you, if you don't, how in the world do you know where the inflection and all that needs to
I mean,
come
there's
in?
like the
So.
oldest, there's like an old adage for audiobook narrators where you narrate a book and in the last chapter you find out that the character has got like a Russian accent, right? It's this nightmare situation, which thankfully I have not encountered. But I mean, I'm a theater actor. For my money, I need to know where the story's going, and the only way to know that is to read the book. I think that for my in the way that I perform a piece, that's how I respect the work and respect the nuance that the author has written in there. I have a when I do pre-read, I pre-read in a specific way where I'm looking for certain things and I'm reading much faster than I typically do. And so there's still a freshness to the scenes as far as the nitty-gritty is concerned, but I always read the book fully before I jump in.
There you go.
I love that. How long does it take you to record something? So, we talk about pre-reading time because I know how long it takes me to read a book. And I know how long other people take to read books. And then when you talk about how your time, because you have to schedule your time out. So you have to leave time to read it, although quickly, and then narrate. So average length novel, about what's the time investment in something like that?
Yeah, so it really depends. There are different different genres require different prep. Obviously, for like a large sci-fi piece with 150 characters and planets and different accents, I mean, for every book I do, I'm creating a spreadsheet of all the characters, their presented gender, their dialect, any sort of things that might be a marker for how they're going to sound. Because when you go back after you've read the whole book, it's good to have these little flags, especially if it's series, because then you have this from book one. When this character comes back and is the evil guy in book 7, and you can sort of trace, and of course I have voice match files for everything as well. But that's all to say, I'd say it takes probably in general between like 3 and 4 hours for every finished hour of audio. And that's including the prep
Oh.
time, including the recording time. Because I can, I can rip through a few hundred pages, in a day, 300 pages in a day of prep material, especially if it's a series that I know and I know these characters. But if it's a new series or if it's a nonfiction where there's a lot of names and a lot of cultural pronunciations that require research, that can sometimes, double the prep time. So it really depends. But typically when I'm in the booth, I can crank out around like one finished hour every, 2 hours, 2.5 hours.
Interesting. That's cool. I love the bloopers that you do, that you put up on your reels
I
sometimes.
try to catch
Like
them. I try to catch them. It's
that's
tough because you're
fantastic.
going and you're trying to stay focused, and sometimes it's a blooper, and I punch and roll and I go back and I'm like, oh, I should capture that one. That one's particularly stupid.
No, my editor brain loves it because I do this with my authors sometimes where I'm editing something and I'm like, okay, that's a blooper reel for the back of the book. Because sometimes some of the things that they'll write, I'm like, I don't think that's what you meant, but it's really freaking funny. So we need to save that.
Our brains say wild things sometimes, and when you're speaking just words by yourself in the dark, you don't clock that you're saying the crazy thing.
And then you go back and listen to it or read it and go, or someone else reads it and goes,
you're like, no way. Sometimes you get the pickup packet and it's like, no way I said that. There's absolutely no way I could have possibly said that. And absolutely I've said it. And I've said it with such confidence and vigor that it's just, fun to share that.
There have been some doozies because I do audio proof also. And sometimes I'm, you know, I'm reading along and I'm listening to it. And then it's like, whoa, 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 go back. That's okay, that's really freaking funny, but that's not supposed to be. And then it's like, I'll send it to the author and they're like, no. And I'm like, yeah, we'll all have kind of a little giggle about it because it's like, okay, wow, that is kind of funny, but ooh.
Well, let's change that.
Yeah, we got to go back and redo that. So yeah. This is something that just kind of came to my mind when you said that is accents. How many accents can you do?
You know, it's I went to theater school, and so I was trained in reading the International Phonetics Alphabet. So given time, I can do most dialects, certainly most Anglo-derived dialects. Some that I have in the pocket for books are like, you know, your Irish and your Scottish, and I can crank out a British accent. Those are the ones that are my primary that I think I typically do.
Do you have a favorite?
Yeah, I really like Irish accents. I find them so beautiful.
So do we.
Go ahead. Answer us in that Irish accent.
Oh, you're putting me on the spot. All right.
I'm sorry.
Let me just put the caveat out there that this is just play. What I'm saying right now is just play. We're just playing. You know, just we're playing around. We're just talking here. We're just having a row with each other. We're just saying, Joel, just complain about it. You have any questions for me, of course.
I love it. Thank you.
Just channeling my best Colin Farrell as often as I can.
I love it.
So I know that you narrate other genres. I'm gonna put you on the spot. What's your favorite, and why do you do romance?
It's unequivocally romance. My favorite. It's my largest. Portion. It's the largest body of my work, and so I've been able to delve into the genre in a way where I've gotten to see and experience more of the subgenres. As a listener, I digest fantasy like it's my lifeblood. I am a nerd through and through. I love a high fantasy. I love magic. I love battles. I love all of that. But when it comes to narrating, I really have. I think it really. I was talking to someone recently about this. I think it just comes down to human relations. You know, I've been acting for so long. This is what I've chosen to represent as my life's work, is understanding people and the way that they choose to represent themselves physically and verbally, the nuances of, you know, of anxiety and the way that people express love. And it's all there in romance books. You know, of course, you know, when I first started romance, I've said this before, I had no idea. I had no idea what it was. I thought Fabio, I thought, sure, this will be fun. And then I had the privilege of reading some really wonderful romance titles that were, you know, as I'm sure you all know, the meat of it was in the relationships, is in the best friends, and the way in which, you know, people show love, not only romantically, but to the people that they care about and want to protect. And it's all about that and family, right? I want to have a family someday, so I really love narrating like second chance romance with like a single dad with a bunch of kids. I love that stuff so much.
I love your answer.
Yes.
Well, it's the truth, right? I mean, it's
well, we're all so just... many. I'm sorry.
No, please.
So many people make fun of romance readers and romance books, and it's like they are deep. There are some
they don't
deep...
get it. They don't no, get it
because they've never read it.
No, yeah. Nope. And how could you understand anything before you take part in it? Right. And again, so was I. I misunderstood it until I understood it. Yeah. And so I try to give as much grace as I can to those folks as I bring them into our world. I bring them into the romance spot.
Yes.
Come, you don't know what you're missing.
That's been my goal for the last 3 years, is converting as many people from book snob to romance book addict as possible, because
you know,
I was
there's
a
different
a
feel
snob.
To it, right? There's like when I listen to a 30-hour fantasy book, I'm like, I know what I'm getting myself into. I'm here for the wild. Like I said, I'm here for the wildness, And then when I'm reading, when I'm prepping a romance book, I feel very different and very real things. It's less an escape and more a nice, relaxing reflection. Sometimes relaxing, depending on not so much for the mafia romances.
Yeah, but, some of those romantic suspense ones can get a little bit intense also. Where
oh, like, I love it.
I know. I love it.
But then
it.
There's it's the ones with like dogs and like, you know, he owns a coffee shop and she owns a CrossFit and they both have dogs and they're like eating shit on the street and there's like a million meat cutes and it's just right? makes me want to drink coffee and eat baked goods. The amount of stories that make me just want to drink copious amounts of hot cocoa or coffee. Mm-hmm. And sit in a flannel and go chop some wood. I mean, it's all about, you know, there's no fantasy. There's a lot of fantasies going on for everyone involved.
Love it. There's fantasy romance also. Have you done any paranormal?
Yes, I have. I've done a few, but my favorite is a series that I've just begun, and we're on book one. It's called Bonded by Thorns by Elizabeth Helen. It's a Beauty and the Beast sort of a parallel. It's not a retelling, but you know, it's the I don't have the words for it, but it's that genre where they use the sort of parallel motifs, and this is a reverse harem situation, which was also a first for me, and I just fell in love with it because it's got the fantasy aspects that I love about this. You know, there's a heightened nature to the sort of just the day-to-day scenes, because there's more life and death in the fantasy world just because mm-hmm. of the creatures and the magic, and the stakes are a little bit higher. And so the intensity of the need to protect and the need to care for and the need to, you know, break free are all just much more heightened. So I think that's a fun genre that I hope I can do more in.
I love it.
I am quickly making my way through different books and picking up things from different backgrounds and sub-genres, and yeah, I've got quite the list.
We all have our TBRs. We all have them.
Yeah, I blew my TBR away because when it got to about 1,800 books, I was like,
"Oh my god,
this is a problem." Yeah,
that's absurd.
I actually named it Audrey 2 because I just kept feeding it and it kept getting bigger and bigger.
I love a musical theater reference. God bless you.
I'm a musical theater kid, so I'll say I'm a kid. I'm like, yeah, not a kid, but kind of big into musical theater, so everything revolves around that. But then I was like, Audrey, I love you, but you are my anxiety over the size of you has just gotten to the point where I literally just blew it away. And I was like, okay, now I'm just kind of what's next? So
listen, it's an ebb and flow.
It is. But now my I guess it's a TBL, my to be listened to. Is that a thing?
To listen to
now, I don't know. It is now. That is growing and growing and growing exponentially because so many voices and so many great stories. And I was not an audiobook fan originally. So this is my little audiobook thing. My younger spawn has dyslexia and has been listening to audiobooks for classes since they were 5 and 6 years old. Mm-hmm. And I always thought, you know, audiobooks, okay, fine, whatever, somebody's reading a book to you. And then I started like, I was trying to remember the first one I listened to was By a Thread by Lucy Score. And I was like, this is not somebody reading a book to me. This is performance of a book that I love. And now I'm like an audiobook addict because it's not just reading the words on the page. There's so much more that goes into it. Like you were saying, yeah. It's the prep work and the time and the accents and the background and building the intensity and going with the flow of the story. And it's just,
it's a performance. And you, as a musical theater person, you can appreciate this. It's a performance that you only get one shot at.
Yeah.
You know, I'm doing the show eight times a week, and I got eight times, and they're all slightly different shows, right? Based on the audience, based on everything. But with an audiobook, it's, the pressure is on to give one performance that is the one that's going to live out there and be heard by everyone who wants to participate in the performance.
Yeah,
and it makes a big difference. Ron, you had another question that kind of played into that also. I don't want to ask your question. It's your question.
Oh, we've kind of touched on it. How much does your acting background hinder your audiobook work?
You're going in and out there, but I think, did you say how much did the acting background hinder the audiobook work?
And play into, yeah.
Play into. It plays
help.
Into it. And you know, of course, it is my core work for performance is the years I've spent on stage. And so I think it would be impossible for it to not influence the way that I perform with books. There's absolutely a different type of performance considering the audience is sometimes centimeters away from your voice and I'm performing to a microphone that's 8 inches away versus, you know, shouting to the back of the mezzanine for the 5,000th person up there. So there's a scale that is focused, but all of the same prep work and character work and intention work is the same. I mean, we're still, to me, my goal is to honestly portray a person, especially with some of these duet books where it really feels like a live scene reading. My goal is to really try and express a character as they would be in that moment. And I think the biggest difference, the biggest departure from your sort of classic theater scene work style of performing is when you get into the narration aspects of it. When you're at, whether it's third person or first person, you know, there's a bit of a, it's nice when it's first person because you can really still stay in the scene with that character and ride their emotions as they're going through the thought. But still trying to delineate a difference between when they're speaking and when they're sort of these narration paragraphs, which was a new skill that I've had to learn. And then the third person where you're narrating, but you're also trying to thread in the emotional experience of whatever the closest character is that we're talking about. And just trying to, whenever it's third person, the way I think about it is like, it's like the camera is just, the angle is swinging. So sometimes we're over her shoulder, sometimes we're over their shoulder, sometimes we're on the dog's back, seeing them bop around their apartment and just trying to give some sort of perspective so that the listener has a perspective and it's not just, you know, a blank, not a blank canvas, but not just hearing the words of someone telling you what's in front of you. And it's subtle because, I'm sorry?
No, go ahead. I was just going to say what a great explanation because yeah. I would never have thought that.
You know, it's subtle and I couldn't even tell you how it necessarily translates, but as far as being an actor coming into this work, you know, you got to have a perspective when you're performing. Otherwise, you are just reading. And so even no matter how that affects it, I think that that's always how I'll try to approach it, to give something that has dynamic resonance to it instead of just reading, because as you mentioned earlier, it is so much more than just reading.
And it can make or break a book. Like, and you can ask Michelle, because we have this conversation so often.
So often.
I am a snob. Like, if I don't like it, it's off within 5 minutes. I just can't even. I won't even listen. Like, I will cut it off.
And I think I really think that that's okay. I truly believe, I've said this before, that finding a narrator is like finding a therapist. It's like, it's really got to be someone that resonates with your, however you think and hear the world. And there are some narrators that are renowned and that don't jive with the way that my mind works. And I respect their work and their body of work. But for me, I have my narrators that I would listen to them, you know, narrate the timestamps of watching grass grow because I love their voice so much and the way that they express words. And so that is like, I'm pushing to make that okay, that sentiment is, if it doesn't resonate, it's okay. It doesn't mean it's bad. It just is not, doesn't click with you.
That's it. And it's true because, you know, you listen to something and if you have read the book already and you have something in your mind for what the character should sound like, and then you start to listen to it, excuse me, and the character doesn't sound like that, it kind of kills the whole experience So when you have a narrator who can be very varied, who can come up with the different voices, who fits the accents, who fits the character, I'm not going to mention any names at all. There's no names here, but it was audio proofing a book. Oop. And did I drop out?
You're back now. You're back now.
Okay.
It's probably
sorry.
Me. No, I got you back now.
Yeah. And before I had the dog, that was literally a squirrel moment. There are three squirrels in my front yard running around my car, and the dog saw them and of course had to let me know, Mom, the squirrels
are back. Literal
squirrel moment. Yes. Which is what the dog. Yeah. Because Maggie does not hesitate to tell me when there's anything in the yard, which I love, but still bad timing, dog. Anyway, so there was a book that I was audio proofing, and I messaged Julie and I was like, I'm having a really tough time with this because I should be hearing this and it was so far off that it was difficult to listen to, and it's my job. I have to listen to it. So I can't just say, no, thanks. But I can see how it can affect when someone's read the book or even not read the book and they're trying to place in their mind the character, because voices do have an impression of what someone looks like. It can impart an element of age. It can, has so much to do with location, and it really creates a character. So when it's not the right voice, it's like, check, please. And I've done that a couple times. It's like, yeah, this is not for me. I love the book, but the narration's just not working. So we're just going to move on to the next one because there's too many good books to listen to.
Yeah. It's a fine line, and it's a tricky choice as a narrator to make in terms of creating characters, because there's one train of thought that is, let's just talk about accented characters. You can go as far as a very authentic accent for a character, and it can be almost inaudible. It can throw people off more because it is so authentic. That it doesn't leave enough wiggle room for the person that they created in their mind when they read it. And so there is a certain element to, and I'm still learning this, right? I still feel like such a youngin in this industry as I'm finding my voice for the different genres, but there's an element of, like Robert Hatchett's male main characters all live within a certain world, because it's a relatable space. It's a neutral space, but it will always have a dial cranked in a certain direction to try and give with age, with cadence, if they're aggressive or if they're passive. And so I'm still trying to figure that out, as I'm sure we all are as we narrate these different characters. But it's a trick, especially in the books that require a very pointed style of accent, or if they want a very specific voice for a character, it's a risk, right? We make a choice and we stick with it.
Yeah. Do the authors that you work with give you any background ahead of time? Like, I want it to kind of sound like this, or here's an example of how I want it to be read, or is it more kind of here's the book, have fun?
It's a little bit of both. There are sometimes when you work with production companies, there's actually no contact with the rights holder or the author. And so it all goes through them. And typically they'll have the author fill out a sheet, like a prep sheet, which gives an opportunity for name pronunciations, clarifications, any kind of pronunciation clarification, and space to give a vibe or a blurb about each of the main characters, or if there are any specific asks about specific characters, to bring that up at the top of the recording process. And when I work with indie authors, I try to leave space for that at the top before I send in the performance sample of, if you have any specific desires for characters, now is the time to let me know that so I can work that into my prep. I would say more often than not, it's pretty minimal in that way. It really all depends who you work with. And some authors are great. I've worked with some indie authors that are fantastic. I mean, again, I keep talking about being a theater actor, but doing theater in New York for years, you work on these passion projects of people who have just spent years of their life writing this play, and you go into the black box and you have like a month to put it up, and it's like, okay, we're doing this all together, and give me and they put their heart into it. And sometimes you get authors that send you, oh my gosh, I had, this was for Bonded by Thorns, actually, that same book that I was talking about. The other narrator and I get this beautiful PDF of, they had generated images of the sort of celebrities that they had envisioned for the characters, but had them crafted in a way where it gave them a fantasy element and gave them their height and their age, their background, their eye color, their vibe. It was all this wonderful information, and they're like, here's this information, run with it. This is just what we had envisioned for it. And it was, it's great. It's great when it's, because it's, and then it puts in, they give the onus on us to take that and run with it, which is much easier to do at the front of the project than after the performance sample. You know, there's, sure. I'm sure you're all familiar with this, the way, you know, the narration works is, you know, they get the performance sample and then it's off to the races with the narrator. Because it's just impossible to go in and nitpick as we're recording chapter by chapter. The book would never get finished. So I'm happy with an author that gives me either full rein and appreciation for what the choices I make, or if they give me a really well thought out spreadsheet, I appreciate the passion for it, you know.
I love it. I'm a fan of audio samples. I love it when I get those from my authors and they're like, okay, this is who's going to be in your ears next. And I'm like, ooh, and I get to listen to it a little bit first. It's like a little tease. But it can make a difference because, you know, when it's a chapter of, okay, that's not how we kind of envisioned the character, it's a lot easier to go back and say, hey, can you make him lighter? He needs to be darker. He needs to sound a little less intense, a little more happy. And we were talking the other day and I'm like, he needs to sound like less of an asshole. And I didn't know how else to say it, you know. Oh, by the way, we have no filter here. But I didn't know how else to say it, but it was like, just the vibe was very different. And I was like, I don't even know how to say that. But the author was like, oh, I know what you mean. And they were able to turn it around. But I was like, I just know what I know what I'm hearing and what I'm not hearing. And it's just, you know, but
that's why it's so helpful to get, you know, if they can, if anyone can provide that information up front, it's good to clock that, even if it's a tertiary character. Okay. When they come in, I'll give them this energy for this scene.
I love that.
So, okay. You use two different names. Mm-hmm. Why do you use two different names? What was the thought process behind the two names?
The thought process was, in the beginning, my friend who narrates, she also works in romance, and she recommended a pseudonym after she told me the type of content that I would potentially be narrating. And I thought, okay, great, I'll start off with a pseudonym. And I thought of Robert Hatchett all those years ago, and I was recording everything under Robert Hatchett back in 2019. And then I realized, like, the real reason to have a pseudonym, which is searchability. If I'm narrating like a young adult book out there, I don't want the listeners who are searching for that, potentially children, to come across, you know, Eight Nights of Sexy Sin. it's not what you want. It's not a good look. And so I want those to be separate only in that way, so that authors that want, you know, me for a certain style can search my work and find work that is similar and not have any, you know, surprises. And I've chosen to put all of my romance work, clean and steamy, all under Robert Hatchett, because I, like I said, I really embrace the romance work, and I just want it all to be under one name, because that's who I am. I'm not trying to hide who I am, which is to say it is absolutely acceptable to keep those separate. I have a lot of narrator friends who don't like to show their face in that way. It's just choice I made and where I'm at.
Cool.
I love it. I'm always curious because I know that there are several narrators who use multiple names for different styles.
Yeah.
And it's, I always find it fascinating of why some decide, nope, this is it. It's just, this is who I am. And then others authors use pen names all the time. And sometimes it's to differentiate genres or subgenres. Sometimes it's because, one of my friends is a preschool teacher. She's like, I do not want my students, you know, looking
at my name.
That makes
so much sense. That makes a ton of sense.
Right. She's like, it's not like I'm embarrassed about what I write, but it's not suitable for them to read it. So we're just not going to give them the opportunity to look for that information. And I was like,
exactly.
That makes a lot of sense. As a former teacher, I'm like, you know, that makes a lot of sense why you would do that. I taught high schoolers, so they were already reading. My high school students were reading romance before I was reading romance. but I'm like, you know, I get the purpose behind it. So we're like almost at time. You're doing a show. You are an actor and you are doing a show, Gatsby. Tell us about Gatsby.
Sure. So I play Nick Carraway in an immersive production of The Great Gatsby off Broadway in New York City.
Jay Gatsby invites you to one of his infamous parties, and it's the hottest show in New York. The champagne flows and the drama unfolds, and you'll be right in the middle of it all. Get ready for an unforgettable evening.
And we opened a few weeks ago, and this production is it's very unique. It's a unique way of storytelling for us to present this story in an immersive way. Imagine you walk into a space. It's a massive jazz bar. You come in. It's decked out wall to ceiling in 1920s sort of Art Deco. Is Art Deco the right phrase? Someone's gonna call me on that. But you're immediately transported into the world. You're going down a flowing staircase. And there's a big beautiful bar, and you start to clock that there are interactions happening around you. And you might meet Daisy. You might meet Mr. Gatsby as he's walking around his party. And the show kicks off with a big monologue that I do, which really sort of focuses the show and brings us into the world of F. Scott Fitzgerald. And I am tasked with the privileged and wild responsibility of speaking his words, which are so thick and beautiful with prose and poetry. The writer, Alexander Wright, the show is about 7 years old, I think. It started over in London, and it's grown. They've produced it in Korea, in Brussels, in Wales now. And this is the first New York City production of it, and I think is one of the largest in scale. But they've been perfecting this method of storytelling for quite some time now. And so what I think they've done a really nice job is weaving some actual real text from the book and bringing it into a theater space and making it believable that these characters would say these things, especially for Nick. There's one thing about the dialogue in The Great Gatsby, which is, you know, written very naturalistically. But for me, my character, when I'm speaking these monologues and I'm quoting the book in a sense, it's turning that prose into activated dynamic dialogue. I really think my work in audiobooks has given me a lot of tools in being able to activate that dialogue. It helps that I walk around the space and, you know, you could be there having a drink with your friend, and within the first 5 minutes of the show, it's like I have my hand on your shoulder delivering my first sentence to your face, and then running over to someone on the other side and delivering the next paragraph to them and their friends, and then all of a sudden the show starts and there's a big dance, and then out of nowhere each character will pull about 20 people into side rooms, and all of a sudden the jazz bar has been diminished by 100 people, and there's a new scene going on, and I'm in a separate room with Tom and Myrtle, and I'm meeting Myrtle Wilson, and with a small group of 20 people, and this is generally how the show goes. So you as an audience member are invited to join actors throughout the piece. As you're brought into separate rooms, you know, you might be brought into Gatsby's office as he talks about his business deal, or Daisy's room as she talks about, you know, what dress to wear or how she feels about Tom. And there's multiple moments during the show where everyone's brought back into the big main space. And those are where the big sort of tentpole moments of the show happen. So everyone really sees the grand arc of The Great Gatsby. There's no way to see every little tiny scene, but you'll get the big, you know, the big moments as we move through the story, and we do it all up to the tragic and bitter end.
It is fascinating because when you think theater, you think you're sitting in a seat. Mm-hmm. There are actors on stage. Yeah. They are well choreographed and well rehearsed, and everything goes hopefully everything goes to plan. It doesn't always, but everything goes according to how it's supposed to. And you're an observer. So immersive, okay, for one, to be immersed in Gatsby's world is pretty incredible. I get chills just thinking about that. But to have that where you're interacting, where things can change, you know, somebody does something, says something. Have you done improv? I know this is way off the rails also, but do you have a background in improv?
Yeah. Okay. And it really plays in a major way into the show, because the way that we do immersion is you are an observer as an audience member, but you are at Gatsby's party. So you are physically in the world that the characters are in. So there are stylistically a number of different ways to go about doing immersive theater. One of them is to have the show take place around the audience and amidst the audience, but the audience isn't in the world of the show. For our production, the audience very much is in the world of the show. And so we will use audience members as sounding boards, or, you know, throw lines to characters through audience members as if we were at a party. And it's, you know, if Gatsby tells everyone to sit down because he wants to talk to Nick Carraway, it's an awkward moment. And I might look to someone and go, well, this is quite strange to ask everyone to sit at a party, isn't it? And I can look at, you know, so there's moments of nuance that we're allowed as far as improvisationally that go above and beyond our scripted scenes that are the real meat and potatoes of bringing in the audience into the world, because there's a certain amount of agency which we allow our audience. There's a sort, you get a little scripted speech as you walk into the space, which says, you know, like, this is an immersive piece. If an actor talks to you, you're more than welcome to speak back to them. But if they're speaking to each other, that's your cue to listen. And so we try to set a number of ground rules, which, you know, are there and sometimes are broken. And we have things that we do to bring the show back on track. But it is it's a colossal effort, truly. And not only vocally, but to corral the audience. It is it's a huge team effort. From stage management to actors to our house staff, it's just it's a wild thing we're doing.
It's herding cats to the extreme. I mean, that's
and trying to keep everybody in world as we're herding. So if we're going to, Tom wants to take Nick into a small room, we're taking 40 people with us, and I'm talking about how I knew Tom in college, and, you know, this was our friendship, and we've talked to Tom, the actor that I. We've talked about our history as our characters, and, you know, I've read the book like 4 times now, and I've mined it for every little bit of gold that I can just throw in, because there are so many fans. Show is like, I've said this before, but it's like it's reached a point of like mythology for American culture, as the 1920s begin to disappear into a time where people living don't have many active memories of it. We have this story, which is this little, like, it's like putting a cup underwater. You get to see underwater. I feel like it really is this lens into this time, and it's where the American people started to be judged by what they have. And so it's a massive conversation about class and power, and it's all in there. And it's a
that's why Gatsby still taught in high school.
Right. I mean,
it's so many elements of it that are relevant and that are universal.
It's a turning point for Americans too. And the London, the production team were, you know, very excited to finally bring it over to New York, to the story's home. I mean, the Fitzgeralds lived here. This was their life in a way. It was an exaggerated version of their life, but they lived very fully.
It's fascinating to me that Gatsby was originally produced in the UK, because it is such an American story.
Yeah. I think it speaks to how far that story resonates.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and again, I think I would imagine for, I suppose I can't speak for anyone else, but I would imagine for folks who are not from this country, it's even more of a piece of legend, because, you know, I'm a New Yorker. I've been in this city for 15 years now. I know the history of this city, and I can conceptually see what the 1920s might have been like here. But for someone who's never been to New York, never been to this country, it really, like, It's
very different.
It's very vibrant. It's a very mm-hmm. vibrant way of expressing what was a very dingy and thick existence.
Oh yeah. Do audience guests come in costume?
Yes, and it yeah. is the best. It's the best. The more the audience, they're encouraged to dress up in their when they get their tickets. And there are sometimes when, if our audience is like 50% in full 1920s, it's amazing because it fleshes the world out, right? We bring 20 people into a room and they're all dressed like us. It's like, it's really like we're talking to, you know, people at the party. And in some way, I think there's also something exciting about before we all get established, there's a bit of like, is that person an actor or are they just fabulously dressed? And so there's this like, people or audiences are looking at other audience members trying to figure them out, trying to figure, are they going to try to pull me? And so it creates this sort of, it makes the space very alive and very energetically easy to play with the more people dress.
Oh, I love it.
For the age.
Which brings us back to herding cats. And to jump off. And...
Oh, Ron, you're fading in and out.
Attending book signings. I heard... said you're going to book signings.
Yes. How's that? Yes. It's the best. Ah, gosh. It's so exciting. Everything just fell. All right. Oh, gosh. Please stay. It's really fun. I went to my first one, Indies Invade Philly, last year. And, man, it was a pretty pivotal moment for me, talking about the romance genre with y'all. It was the moment that connected the work to the community, because I had never met anyone else in the community. I'd met a couple narrators in the city, but never to the extent that I did there. And the really amazing people at Audibly Addicted, the family that they created in bringing people, narrators and authors alike there. It was warm. It was welcoming. It was inspiring to meet. I was sat between, you know, powerhouse narrators. I was like a little tiny sapling at this table of bonsais that have been around and absolutely crushing the work. And I'd listened to people come up with stacks of 12 books and get back in line for another 12 books because that was the limit, and have a rapport with these narrators because they've seen them at book signings and listened to dozens of their books and talk about, it was specifically, it was a woman speaking about a character from a cowboy romance. And the narrator to my right had narrated, it was a serialized, I'm going to say it was like maybe 20 plus of this series. And the way that they spoke about the character unlocked something in my brain about the real impact that these stories can have. And it was, I think it made it clear for the first time that the impact goes beyond the single story, that the characters in these stories can offer a perspective, not only an escape, but really like a deeper understanding of people. And if, you know, if you're reading a book and you resonate with one character, sometimes you see a movie and you're like, oh man, that character was great. In the book community, you can get a chance to be with that character for like 70 hours. And how beautiful is that? To see them and hear them and hear how they see the world and try to understand why they did something, and to love them for all their faults and their beautiful strengths. That's when I started prepping differently and taking on more work in the romance genre specifically, and trying to expand my subgenres. So yeah, to put it, I mean, not in a nutshell, I just waxed on, but it was really impactful. And I can't wait to go to more. I have, the show has been so beautiful, but it's tethered me to the city, and I really haven't, there were so many this year that I was invited to so graciously, but I couldn't go to. So as soon as I can, they're going to be a priority for me, because that's the, like, that's the,
well, go ahead, Julie.
I was just going to say, you know, Michelle and I, Ron was working at IAP that year that we met you, and Michelle and I met you and were just in, you were warm. Is that
the
best?
End of the line, and Julie said, we have to go back through because, and I was like, that's good because I have to get another picture of, and it was actually you. I was like, I need to get a different picture with Rob because I don't know
I remember the second picture.
Like, okay, here, twist my arm. No, I'll twist it for you. We're going back through because we both wanted to go back through and see you.
But there was something, there's something about you specifically. Most people know this about me. I am not a hugger. I don't like being close to people. I don't know what they've got on them. I'm just weird like that.
It's fair. It's very fair.
And I've never felt a warmth like I did with you. It was crazy. It was like weird.
Oh.
But from that point on, it was like, Rob, we need to. And of course, I work with authors and I'm like, Rob.
I'm like, yeah, I'm going to say your name
really
comes up
good.
Quite a bit when authors are like, okay, this is the character. Who am I looking for? And there's so many to choose from, but I'm going to be honest. I'm like, yeah, you got to go talk to Rob for
That's
this one.
Very That's, humbling to hear. That's yeah. very kind of you to put me in the pot when you can. I love people. I like, you know, I've chosen to devote my life to being different people. And I mean, you ask about these book signings, getting to meet everyone, and it's just like a massively humbling experience. Oh. And it was like, I can assure you the warmth that you felt, I felt it back because there was so much love in that room. There was so much love in that room and support. It was wild.
Yeah.
One more thing about what you were saying in regards to romance in general and the connection that readers have with the characters, or I have to actually, you know, tell you that these books have healed many people just because of what the authors add into the story. It could be something that I've been through, and it just gives you not education, but there's just
there's a connection,
healing.
The
honesty,
there's
the
a healing in it.
Yeah.
So they are really powerful. I mean, words are powerful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's catharsis. It's the root of all different types of group therapy out there is going to a room of people and sharing an experience that you are having and knowing that everyone else in the room has shared a similar trauma and seeing how similar other people have responded to very different life circumstances, but seeing how the response was the same.
Mm-hmm.
And feeling heard and feeling seen. And I completely agree with you that I've seen it firsthand in some of these titles, seeing these characters experience, you know, various types of trauma from simple to very complex and coming out on top,
mm-hmm.
that being a core tenet of these stories.
Knowing there's a happy ending.
Yeah.
It's very powerful. And when you can immerse yourself in it where you're like, okay, I feel seen, I feel heard, I feel understood. And then you know that it's going to have that happy ending. You know, there's angst. A lot of books have a lot of angst, but you know, when you get to the end, it's going to be
have conflict, you know?
You know, there's going to be the happy ending. Ron, what were you saying?
I wanted to swing around and say that your name was one of the very first they mentioned when we went looking for our bedtime story narrator.
I reached out to Mo specifically and I was like, so we have this thing and it's a huge ask. And it was a huge ask because this is a Please. Brand new author. And we were like, okay, so we have this thing that we're doing. And would you be able to reach out? Because I knew you were working with Audibly Addicted from IAP. I was like, would you be willing to reach out to Rob about narrating the prologue as a bedtime story for our event? And it was like, I know it's a huge ask, it's totally okay if it's not okay, but this is what we're thinking, and can you help a girl or girls out here?
Well, so you know the secret weapon now, because I would do anything for Mo. I would do anything for her. She's fantastic.
She is an incredible human. I will tell you, she has been really amazing about putting us together with people who have the same kind of mindset, you know, who are in it for the right reasons. And just her willingness to reach out and say, oh yeah, I can reach out to Rob, no problem. And then getting back to us and everything else. It was just, thank you.
They are community creators, the people, the good people at Audibly Addicted.
Yes.
They have done so much for me and clearly they've done for you as well. It's and it only benefits everybody. And I was so happy to do that for you. That was an honor to be asked, quite frankly.
Thank you.
Thank you for asking me to do that, really.
It was
amazing.
It was one of those things that if you, Michelle will say this all the time, if you don't ask, you'll not, you know, it's a definite no.
Exactly.
And so we're like, okay, well, we'll ask. And I can tell you the author was in tears, happy, very honored.
Two things we're going to do. One question, and then we'll do speed round. And that last question is your social media, because we know that you've got a social media presence. And talk to us a little bit about that. I have a favorite reel, a favorite TikTok that you did. It's the daddy one.
So as a romance narrator, you have to have an arsenal of different inflections with each different word you have in your tool belt. Let's talk about the daddy arsenal. Call me daddy. Okay, daddy. Hey, dad, you mind watching the kids?
Dad? Oh, my God, you're so dumb.
Hey, bud.
God damn it, dad, knock one before you out. Sorry, God, I'm so sorry. Jesus Christ, dad, I was reading. Just get the fuck out.
Hey, daddy, is that the suit I bought you in 1801?
Daddy's home! Can we have french fries?
Daddy.
I have sent that to so many people because it shows so much range. Plus, daddy. Okay. It's fantastic. So,
I mean, I knew what I was doing. Let's be clear. This is was all thank Pedro Pascal for that.
Yes. That was perfect. Talk to us a little bit about your social media, how that impacts you, why it's out there, what you do.
Sure. You can find me as Read by Rob on Instagram and TikTok. I thought that would be a nice handle to encompass all the work I do in voiceover and audiobook narration. They're all words coming out of my mouth. And I started it because I wanted to make a presence. I wanted to grow in the industry, and I was trying to put my seeds down in anything that could possibly stick to grow to allow me to meet people. And I noticed there were a lot of authors on TikTok, a tremendous amount of indie authors on TikTok, not just indie authors, authors. And I had never been on TikTok, and so I started it. And I had read, I think it was like a croissant recipe, as if it were, you know, a steamy scene. And it was funny and it made me feel stupid and laugh. And since then, I try to just, my whole ethos with putting stuff out is like, if I'm in the booth and I'm laughing at myself, it's worth putting out there to see if anyone else might laugh at it. It's hard to say that I'm curating some things, but there are moments when, I watched Pedro Pascal do an interview and he makes a joke about, you know, being called daddy. And I'm like, oh, daddy, what a word I'm familiar with. And I'm like, there's something there. There's something there. And sometimes it's hilarious. And sometimes, boy, it falls flat. And sometimes I like to sing. And I just, you know, I try to, it's me, right? Like, I'm not trying to, it's not a character.
I love that because it's authentic. Me. Yeah, and I think that's what resonates, is that it's like, okay, he's not trying to be someone else. This is just kind of who he is.
That's all I got at the end of the day, right? I don't know if it's cool or crazy, but it is the truth. It is the truth at the end of the day. I don't do a lot of like live narration on there because I found I prefer to be in my space for that. But occasionally I'll bop on just, you know, to check in with some folks and see if they want to see the process. I'm very precious with my process. So I found out early on that I prefer to do that off camera.
I love it.
Well, thank you for all the questions we have. We got the speed round. So the speed round's really easy. Don't think, just say. We're going to give you a this
don't
or
think,
that.
Just
so,
say.
Yeah, it's a this right, or that. So okay. We're just going to go through it fast. Julie, I think you're up first.
Beach or lake?
Oh, beach. Oh, beach. My coffee wife or... is like, I am beach.
Oh, coffee or tea?
Oh, God, that's so tough. Tea. I'm going to go tea.
Sweater or hoodie?
Oh, my gosh, another tough one. Oh, gosh. All right, hoodie.
Jeans or sweats?
Ooh, sweats. Let's go. Give me comfort. Give me leisure.
Pizza or tacos?
Tacos. I'm lactose intolerant. Pizza is wonderful, but it's just so bad for me.
About the tacos.
Tacos every night. Let's go.
books or audio?
That's that is rude. I'm gonna say books because there is no audio without the book. All right.
There you go.
Okay, so Kindle or paperback?
Paperback.
Oh, all right.
I like the way it smells.
There is something about holding that paper in your hand. I get it. Are you a planner or a go with the flow type of person?
Depends on the circumstance.
When it comes to work, what about your reading?
When work is plan, all plan.
Plan, cool.
All right, frozen yogurt or ice cream? Are you a Froyo or are you a Ben and Jerry's?
As long as it's dairy free, ice cream. Let's go.
Cool. All right, cats or dogs?
Dogs. I'm allergic to cats and I love my dog.
Very cool. Very good. That's it. See, wasn't that easy and fun? Oh,
that was so quick.
That was quick, right? That's no, nope. I was gonna throw a message.
I saw it. You were gonna say it. We all know it.
She's behaving today.
What is wrong with me? Oh, anyway, no. Rob, thank you so much. I am
Please.
So bad. I know.
This was really
thank
fun.
You so much for joining us, for coming online and spending your time, which we know is precious, and sharing some of your process and your thoughts with us and your time with us. And any last things you want to say, what's coming next, what you got going before we let you go?
I just won my first earphones award, which is pretty exciting. For a multicast, it's called Best Friends by Shannon Hale. It's a really beautiful story. She wrote this as a graphic novel, as a loose version of her experience growing up as a girl and all the things that come with adolescence. And it's literally, I got really emotional reading the graphic novel. And then we were brought in the room. It was the first group book done together at the Macmillan Studios post-pandemic. And it's just got a beautiful cast. Wow. It's got a lot of, you know, just relatable stories. And it's a milestone for me. I'm pretty thrilled about it. And so I'm feeling excited and congratulatory to all the
congratulations.
People
congratulations. Nice. That is awesome.
Yeah. And my first Lauren Blakely book just dropped, Double Pucked, which is a hockey romance, which is really thrilling.
Yeah, I'm going to go in and grab that one.
it's great. It's Samantha Brentmore, J.F. Harding. They're both, I mean, I'm sure you've met them both. They're absolute gems of humans, including, you know, Lauren herself, who is a wonderful collaborator. Just wonderful to collaborate with.
Oh, that is awesome.
Very cool. And what's your next, do you have a next signing that you're going to that you know of that you can talk about?
I will be at Indies Invade Philly this year, this October. So that is that's the only one confirmed on the books, and Rare Paris next year in April, which is thrilling, albeit I'm sad that it conflicts. So it's conflicting, but they are the two that are on the books for now. But keep an eye out. There's going to be more coming as soon
awesome.
As I get that schedule freed up.
I love it. Well, thank you so, so much, Rob. We really appreciate your time and
your talent and your intensity and coming on with us today. So thank you so, so much. We appreciate
it. The honor
it.
Is it's really mine. You all are so supportive. Thanks for having me on here. I'm always happy to chat whenever you'd like.
Awesome. Well,
thank you. Thank you so much.
All right.
Thank you.
You have a great day.
Have a great afternoon.
Right. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.